This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Cameron Luthi. Cameron is a senior budget analyst with Bloomberg Government. Miguel Garrido, who is a quantitative analyst for Bloomberg Government. And Miguel, I'm going to have to ask you to define that term at some point during our discussion today, okay? And Mr. Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, a consulting firm here in town, and he's also the chairman of the coalition's board of directors. And guys, welcome to the show.
Great to be here again.
Thank you.
What was that word again? What is he? A what? A quantitative?
A quantitative analyst. Okay.
I'm impressed. I'm honored. It's good.
Yeah, that is good.
It's a great show.
Well, Miguel went to a great university.
Uh-oh.
Princeton.
So, oh, there you go.
So we're getting ready for some very sophisticated analysis of the budget here. And that's what we're here to talk about today. Guys, we're going to talk about the fourth quarter, the end of year scramble. Bill likes to refer to it as Christmas in September, I guess, so to speak, right? But what presents aren't under the tree, mm-hmm. What contract strategies are out there for companies, and just what the profile looks like in unobligated funds and moving forward, at the various departments. And so I guess I just want to kick it off, Cameron. Can you give us a picture of where we are in terms of the funds that are available, what's been spent, and just sort of that pattern that that you're seeing in 2014.
Yeah, Roger, we've taken a couple of different slices of the data, looked at 2014 unobligated balances, and the first thing we did was we looked at the budget every year that the White House puts out, what OMB puts out, has estimates of how much in the way of unobligated balances they have coming into the year and how much they think will be left at the end of the year. Now, the problem with those estimates is they're old by now, and as we all know, the government shut down for 16, 17 days at the beginning of this fiscal year, which disrupted the normal pattern of obligations. When we talk about how important the fourth quarter is to both the government and the contracting community, but first quarter is important too, so we've got some distortions in the numbers. Typically, over the in the last 3 years coming into 14, agencies can obligate a huge percentage of their available funds in Q4. You've got agencies like the State Department, where the average over the last 3 years was about 47%, HHS about 47%, Homeland Security 39%, VA about 35%. So you see the pattern. There are differences between agencies. Energy is a sort of an anomaly. They have a lot of their contracts with the labs, so they're not the same as the other agencies in their big obligations at the beginning of the year.
Okay. And like the Department of Defense, I wanted to ask you about that. You didn't mention them, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. So, and then what is their spend profile? I think over the last, half of the year is when the vast majority of, the last quarter three and quarter four is when, DOD does its executing on funds. Is that accurate?
That's right. So as much as 32% in Q4. So that tells you something. The other thing you and I, Roger and Bill, have talked about over the last year or so a little bit is the degree to which DOD buys a lot more services now, more services, in fact, than goods. We think of DOD and we think heavy, equipment, weapon systems, platforms, and so on. But DOD buys a lot of services. And that is the pattern that obtains in the civilian agencies for services. So it's no surprise that that's the pattern for DOD as well. The other thing is they've gotten used to having continuing resolutions at DOD. Remember, the civilian agencies were stuck with CRs to start the year pretty routinely over the last several years.
Sure.
Well, now DOD's in the same boat. So when they plan the stages of an acquisition life cycle, I think they've begun to see that maybe it's probably wiser not to have for a new start the planned RFP awards in the first two quarters.
Right. So
it sounds like the government's adjusted to Congress's pattern of the last time there was an approved budget was 1997. So you know, we're still waiting 17 years to get an on-time budget. So I guess, Cameron, you're saying that the government, from an acquisition planning standpoint, is on certain big A acquisitions, I guess is what we're talking about here, says, hey, you know, normally at the end of the second quarter or beginning of the third, we're usually pretty knowledgeable what our budget is.
Right. And that's that uncertainty has been a big problem for DOD over the last couple years in particular. But one of our defense analysts, Kevin Brancato, started seeing this. Wait a minute, there's not a lot that's going to be awarded in Q1 and Q2
right,
on these
sure.
major defense acquisition programs. I don't think it's a coincidence.
Right. You know, as I recall in my days in government, right, you'd get, you know, if to the extent they get close to getting a budget on time, right, as to those funds have to be allocated to the various programs and then actually programmed. And there's a whole flow down from basically the department down to the services and then the activities. And that takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And then that delay pushes out, you know, when the funds actually become available for execution and when you issue the RFPs, right?
That's
is that what
right.
you're really talking about?
Yeah. And the frustrating thing for the contracting officers and the program managers is they're worried. They're looking over their shoulder because if their obligations are lower than anticipated, what happens? Congress says, well, geez, I guess you don't need the money. We'll take it out of your next year's budget.
Right. And it is one of the things. So you've seen that pattern, I think. And Miguel, possibly a corresponding pattern, and I don't know if things turn. Yeah, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? But you know, the authority for multiple award IDIQ contracts and task order competitions, that sort of thing. It seems
right.
like you know what has also happened is over the second half of the year, there's a course rather than new contract actions, there's a lot of corresponding, you know, task orders put under existing contracts or modifications to existing task orders.
That's right. And if we divide all contract spending into single award contracts and multiple award contracts, just to add some context, single award contracts still account for the majority of spending. In fiscal 13, it was 79%. The other 21% went through MAX. However, for the quarter four scramble every year, based on our analysis, the quarterly share in of MAX actually jumps to 45% roughly every year versus only 31% for single awards. What that means is that more opportunities are available on these existing vehicles on MAX. And last year, agencies spent $94 billion through MAX. So that's definitely the quarter with the most activity. Now, within Q4, September is the month that is the most active by far. Based on our analysis, about a quarter of all contract dollars on MAX were obligated in September during the last few years, and it actually increased a bit. So there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of activity during Q4. As Cameron mentioned, a lot of services these days are being procured through multiple award contracts. Single award contracts is still mostly weapon systems, submarines.
Big A.
Exactly. A lot of, you know, airplanes. And so those are not as competitive as services and IT services, logistics, for example. And so that's why we focus more on MAX in Q4 because of the opportunities available.
Right, and the streamlined process, Bill.
Roger, that was a quantitative response to your question. Yeah, great job.
Enjoyed it.
I mean, I think part of coming.
See, Miguel,
you got to get
used to your part. You're part of the fraternity now.
We need to go from Princeton University of Maryland. So I'm University of Maryland. You just got to get the lay of the land here.
Right.
And so anyway, from listening to him talk about that, it kind of boils into those who are going to have the greatest opportunity of benefiting as a contractor for Q4 are those who already have established sources of supply. I think that's kind of the bottom line for, you know, as traffic starts to increase, the closer we get to the exit of the year, you know, and if you don't have your easy pass, you know, you're going by a toll booth, man, you're in line right there, you know?
Right. And you know, Bill, your line is right, or the line is right. There's in the fourth quarter, there's more buying, less contracting, right? That's the bottom line.
That's it.
So, and speaking of we buying and selling, we have to take a break. These are commercials. So my guests today are Bill Gormley of the Gormley Group, Cameron Luthby, who's a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Miguel Garrido, who's a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government.
And, I love that.
And we will be talking more about the fourth quarter strategies for contractors, what contracting officers are thinking about when they're going through that, you know, the rush to the deadline. And then there's always the question, how long is really the fourth quarter, right, Bill?
You are that's right. Stand by.
Yeah. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bill Gormley, the Gormley Group, Cameron Luthy, who is a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Miguel Garrido, who is a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government. We're talking about the fourth quarter, what the prospects are for government contractors, what agencies have left to obligate in terms to be able to meet their mission requirements. And, you know, Bill, we talked about the chicken. I mentioned the chicken and egg, I think, in the last segment. So I got another question for you, okay?
There
this is
go.
A pop quiz, okay?
I love it.
Yeah, so which comes first, the budget or the requirement?
The double yolk.
The double yolk? Okay,
well, that's pretty good. One.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, here's where it is. As far as, you know, you have your day-to-day operations. So from a day-to-day operations, the agency can pretty much forecast, you know, what their ongoing spend is going to be, you know. And I think where we get into, you know, having the acquisition background may be a fault as far as being part of this conversation on this question right now. But having said that.
Yeah, it's a handicap for you.
Yeah, right, a lot of people blame contracting on why things don't work in government. But I think if we could pause just for a minute, you know, while our listeners are heading down the road or at a stoplight, you think about it, you know, the government is put in the position, predicament, however you want to categorize it. So when you have a big requirement, you know, we used to have our budget in May, the month of May, for the next year. And so if it's a big system and you're coming up with the budget number based on some forecasted requirements, you know, you're looking at a procurement not leaving the house, an RFP, for almost 2 years. I think a few things can happen between that period of time as far as what industry has to offer, maybe requirements change. So, I mean, I think someone, we need to start, and we're not going to do it here in this show, Roger. We'd love to, but it would be a...
Could be another show.
Could be a history
or a series.
Go forever, right? And so, and plus you want people to come back.
But right, anyway, that's true.
But the key here is that on some of the big requirements, you know, and sometimes the government will come up with a big requirement during the course of the year when the budget's already out. And that's occurred over the past year. And so I think we got to settle down a little bit and get a better feeling around requirements. So to answer your question, I think on ongoing operational, the government does a pretty good job of forecasting. And I think where everyone runs into the hurdles and stop and goes is trying to design a big procurement requirement and then put a budget number on it. And then it's not going to go out on the street for probably 2 years. And I think that is where we start to run into a problem as far as, you know, is the government really getting what it needs to meet? It's getting the requirement, but the requirement may have changed.
Right. Well, not only does the requirement change, but technology change. I mean, there's a host of things that can change. I mean, you know, in 2 years, I guess, you know, Al Gore came up with the internet, right? And then, like, the whole world changed, right? I don't know, right? No, I mean, you guys don't like that one. That, okay. I'm trying to have fun here.
That's a
quantitative thought. I don't know. Okay, it just popped in my head.
Yes, there is an internet.
Yeah. You're right. Okay.
Right. But anyway, get back to that. But I think on the, you know, I think you wanted to talk about Q4 and the spend and some of the areas is going to go to. I think one area, I'm sure the other guests here have additional information on. But I think one thing that gets overlooked by a lot of companies and we're trying to get the word out there as far as other opportunities, is the revolving fund and franchise fund activities, Roger. There's a lot out there. You know, I think, I know you have over 12, I think, on your website, you know, and even HHS is in that business. And a lot of people don't pick that up on their radar. And a lot of these franchise fund activities are going to use established sources of supply.
Okay, I can step back and explain for folks what those revolving funded activities do on behalf of other agencies.
Well, basically, they offer procurement support for other agencies, and they have the authority to do that. There's a limited number, and OMB gives them the franchise, you know, activity, so they can
like Department of Interior has one,
exactly.
Right?
And GSA is an example. NASA, SOUP, is people who've heard about these, NIH. And so while we've heard of them, I think it's in the fourth quarter, it becomes very attractive to those entities. And from a customer standpoint, and there's actually an acronym. I'm sure you've probably heard of this. PALT. Have you heard of PALT?
You're not saying pulp, right?
No, not pulp. That's wood byproduct. Okay. But PALT, Procurement Administrative Lead Time. So agencies have that. Now, how much they stick with that or not, or depending on what they're, probably the more workload they have internally, the more they're going to stick with it. And that pretty much are dates that are predetermined within the agency on how, on when they can handle requirements from internal. And so if an internal customer doesn't get their need met by their internal acquisition, yeah, there are times that they'll go outside and find one of these activities we're talking about here, Roger, to take care of need. I mean, I know one franchise fund activity, a civilian, he just got a $500 million, you know, requirement from Army.
Right, so that they're going to conduct the procurement on behalf of the Army.
Because they couldn't obligate the money before the end of the year.
Right.
So it's a capacity issue, yes. at the Army, yep. And but they need lead time. As you pointed out, they can't wait till the last day of the year.
Exactly.
Right. So you have to, and you sort of have two channels there, right, Bill? You have the direct order, direct bill, where an agency will utilize, like, you know, GSA IT Schedule 70, place the order themselves, or they'll essentially enter an interagency agreement with one of the franchise funds or a GSA, and those entities will conduct the procurement on behalf of the requiring agencies, and they may actually use a pre-existing contract or MAC or that sort of thing. And, you know, I think, Miguel, can you talk a little bit about, you know, the MACs and some of the MACs and the key contracts that are out there that you see a lot of traffic on over the fourth quarter?
Yeah, sure. So at Bloomberg Government, we took two views. One is which MACs have the most money available in Q4 every year. Specifically during the last 3 years, and then which MACs have the most money of their as a share of total annual spend. And so if we look first at the top vehicles that just offer the most obligations every year, it's Schedule 70, GSA Schedule 70 for IT services and products. It's the Army's LOGCAP 4 for logistics services, the Navy's Seaport E program for professional services, the GSA Schedule 874 MOBIS, which is for management consulting services. All of these MACs that I just mentioned have more than $1 billion obligated in Q4 alone. Schedule 70, for example, more than $3 billion over the past 3 years. $3 billion in Q4 alone. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of opportunities for companies. And going down the list, for example, as Bill mentioned, SOUP-4 is another one run by NASA. That's a GWAC, a government-wide acquisition contract. It's for IT products and related services. The GSA Alliant contract, this one is for large businesses. There's also Alliant Small Business. The Army's S3 for knowledge-based services. So a lot of these MACs are one theme that I just ran through is IT services, logistics services. Again, it's not so much, you know, weapon systems, which, as I mentioned earlier, are mostly procured through single awards. If we just step back a little bit and just to provide a definition of what a MAC is, it's a two-step process. It's first, companies are awarded a slot. And then that doesn't guarantee anything, though. Very little sometimes, a couple thousand. But then the real competition comes once you're on the MAC. You compete over and over again for orders. task orders for services and delivery orders for services. So that's where the money is in Q4.
Delivery orders for goods, right?
For goods. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, they're getting those. Yeah, that.
So yes, let me, again, it's.
Oh, go ahead.
There's so many smarts in this room. I'm having a hard time following everything. So anyway, it's trying to, so, you know, where's strategic sourcing fit in the fourth quarter?
That's a very good question, Bill. And maybe we could ask OMB that, right? Or OFP.
Well, I'm just trying, I mean, and I might, it's just kind of interesting. I wonder if there is any, you know, I'm listening here. So under the max is obviously is the move over from, for, I guess what I'm hearing for Q1 through three is pretty much single award is the majority percentage of spend. But in the fourth quarter, that spend moves over to MAC. Is that what I'm hearing? Is that what our listeners are hearing from you?
Within MAC spending, yeah. Most of it, 45%, it occurs in Q4. Single awards are still account for the most in all quarters.
Okay,
that's just because there's the most money there. But within MAC spending on these big vehicles, agencies definitely wait until Q4 to award the most of the actual money or obligations, as we call it. And actually, and Cameron can explain why that is. The reason is it's 1 year money for most services. So agency, it's basically a use it or lose it policy,
right?
System with services.
And you know what? I have to use it or lose it. They're talking about we're hard on a break here, guys. So we have, when I come back, we'll let Cameron answer, talk a little bit about, you know, the color of money and
I'm sticking
all that kind of
this
time. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of, but, you know, he's a former budget analyst. I think you worked at OMB or something like that, didn't you, Cameron? So,
yeah.
So you'll be able to answer this question, right? So again, we'll be back. My guests today are Bill Gormley, the Gormley Group, Cameron Luthi, senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Mel Garrido. He's a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Fed News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Bill Gormley, the Gormley Group, Cameron Luthi, who is a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Miguel Garrido, who is a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government. And Cameron, when we took the break, Miguel had put you on the spot to give us a little, fiscal law seminar on the color of money and, you know, the timing of money and all that sort of thing. So, Professor Luthi, please.
Thank you, Dr. Waldron.
Okay.
So, most appropriations, annual appropriations for federal agencies, particularly civilian agencies, the money's available for 1 year. So, the start of the year is October 1, the end of the year is September 30th. If agencies don't obligate the money, that is, put the full faith and credit of Uncle Sam on the line by signing a contract, making a grant agreement, or hiring a federal employee, the money lapses. That means in budget geek speak, the money's gone.
Does that mean obligated?
That's right. Obligation. Okay. So you got to obligate it. You don't have to outlay it. And of course, the difference is, I always tell people, think about it this way. An appropriation is either what you've asked Congress to put in your checking account or what they've already put in your checking account. The obligation is you've signed the contract. The outlay is when the check gets cashed, right?
Okay. All right.
So from a budget standpoint, if you think about it, there's enormous pressure on agencies to get money on contract, to obligate the funds before the end of the year, before the funds lapse. That in turn leads to some interesting behavior that we've talked about a little bit. Now, it's true there is money at DOD in particular that's available for more than 1 year. R&D money is 2 year, most procurement money is 3 year, and shipbuilding is 5. And part of the reason for that is they don't want to force, in a major acquisition activity, they want to make sure that the government still has leverage vis-a-vis the contractor. So if you were in a position where you had to obligate it, you might be in a position where you'd lose leverage with the contractor. But this way, you can hold the money back until the contractor meets the milestones, passes the test, or what have you.
And also for the contractor or for the private sector, provides some certainty for, you know, to the extent you have, five-year money, three-year money, and that money's been appropriated and you have it available for obligation, that's a certainty for business planning purposes, right?
Sure.
I mean, as opposed to, each year you got to make sure Congress approves the annual appropriation to fund
Yeah.
Something, right?
That's right. It's a greater certainty, although, as we know, if money is not being spent, if it's not being obligated because there's a delay, because of a contract dispute, because of a labor dispute, because of a failure to meet a milestone or a test requirement, sometimes Congress will see that money laying around and say, well, let's move it and use it for something else.
Sure. And Bill, you know, so Cameron's walked through and talked about, you know, putting the money in the bank and then, you know, the contract and that sort of thing. And you've sort of, in the segment before, you also talked about those servicing activities and people who award contracts on behalf of other agencies. Are there some aspects of that people need to keep in mind when they're thinking about workload and the timing for these things?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that question, but as a taxpayer, I'm listening to him talk with his background, and I'm like, you know, it's amazing how we haven't had a budget pass on time in 17 years, and yet Congress looks upon the acquisition community, we'll say the agencies, but it boils down to the acquisition communities, to get better organized and do a better job, and yet they're reacting to Congress. Now, if Congress was 100% on time, then there's a right to ask the contracting community to be 100% on time. And so when you've curtailed any funds that are committed to go through what Cameron just said, you know, so procurement's waiting for the money. The customer's waiting for the money, and the customer sends that to procurement. Procurement's delayed a half a year. I mean, things are just piling up, Roger. We got a traffic jam. We got a procurement jam. And so how do you get out of, you know, you ever watch Icy Roads or something like that and whatever, you know.
Ice road truckers.
That's right. What it is. Yeah. And at some point it thaws out, right? And right. If you don't, I mean, so we got to
figure then you're
out,
in trouble.
And we're in trouble, okay? And so the rig shuts down. So, I mean, so they're loading up the procurement, you know, trucks and say, get it done in 6 months, what it's supposed to take. You know, up to a year. And that, I think that clearly, with a lot we read about the fault on government on delivering the requirements. Yeah, they're putting a heck of a responsibility on procurement activities. So let me just get that off. I'm sorry.
I have to tell you, I mean, it's a great point, and I can tell you, great minds think alike. Yeah. You know, in the Sarah Panel report in 2007, there was a chapter put in there talking just about, you know, the impact of, you know, the budgetary process and what it means for the acquisition system and the stress it creates in the acquisition system because of the delays and the continuing resolutions. I mean, so, you know, it's it has been something, but it's that's been pointed out. But, you know,
we complained about it, but the weather, it's still raining.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm an auto guy. So you just go out there. And if you have a V8, unplug four of your wires and then see if the rest of the cylinders carry the same load. I mean, it's going to get a little chunky. All right. And you may not get there. But anyway, we won't turn an auto show here. But anyway, as far as what people can do, let's get back to that. I think by the end of the year, you have to pay real attention. You got to fine tune your acquisition vehicles inside. And I continue to say this, but for those
still using those car metaphors.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
All right. Anyway, by the time everybody gets done listening to this, they're going to have a nice car. All right. So anyway, you know, keep your contract vehicles tuned up on your options are coming up. Get them done earlier and not early, because the sooner you can get that locked in, the better you are as far as being prepared. And we're already in a third to the fourth quarter. So we're, you know, we only have about 56 shopping days left before the end of this year.
Right.
So you have to have high performance. You cannot falter, and you have to be ready to take an order or respond to a fast e-buy. Could be an e-buy out there, which picks up a lot in the fourth quarter, and people are going to go to that quickly for compliance reasons internally, but it's speed on behalf of the government.
So explain what e-buy is, Bill, for folks.
E-buy, when we set that up, it was pretty much to host. There was GSA Advantage. GSA has done a good job of the e-procurement type e-acquisition vehicles. GSA Advantage is pretty much commodity-based, order online, and you can select, click point, and even negotiate at certain levels. When we established e-buy, it was pretty much to host SOW, statements of work, or big commodity buys, Roger. And that was to get an electronic environment to allow quick responses with clear defined requirements. And some agencies have gotten to the point where they're putting RFIs out there now. And that's fine also. And as far as a quick insight on that, just e-buy, Everyone on your schedule, you get automatic e-buy notices. If you're not seeing them, then there's a problem internally. You should have more than one point of contact for e-buy, because if someone's out for a day or two, a requisition could close as we get in the fourth quarter. So as a tune-up, you definitely want to add more than one person to your e-buy points of contact. And then be ready to respond quickly. And I think that's part of the accelerating.
And eBuy gets, I think, it's in the tens of thousands of RFQs up there that are available for that all GSA scheduled contractors can see and potentially compete on, theoretically, right?
You may still give some more points of interest, or what do you want to do?
Sure. We got about another minute.
Here we go. This is another good takeaway at the stoplight. Is the on eBuy, you may see an area that you get a requirement. You're like, that's not me. But there may be something associated with that requirement that you do. So you take the information, in other words, the ordering office and so forth, and you can put them in your pipeline to contact them. I always use the copier analogy, even whether it's a service or product. If you see somebody buying copier equipment, you don't sell that, but you sell copier paper. I think you know where I'm heading. That's going to be a source of potential supplier or a potential customer for your company. Right.
Right. Another aspect I think people need to think about is the cutoff dates. And that's we've talked a lot about servicing agencies and requiring agencies. The franchise funds. They generally all have cutoff dates as to when the requirement and the funding have to be transferred to them so they can actually execute the procurement. Well, in the case of GSA, they used to publish, a single set of dates that were very objective, and they put out a memo and everybody could see it. But that's at GSA, that's fundamentally changed. And then now the cutoff dates, as I understand it, are more flexible in that they assess their workload. And then they figure out, when's the last point that an agency can actually send them a requirement. So what does that mean? So if the cutoff date is earlier in the year, July 30th versus August 15th, that July 30th date seems to indicate they've got a lot of work in-house already. And so that's something to think about from a business intelligence perspective.
So GSA is doing a better job at telling the customer, I'd say immediately, whether they can handle a requirement, not calling you up October 1st and say they couldn't get to it.
Well, that's a different question. I'm just talking about cutoff dates. So hopefully that results in that. Yes, absolutely. So, but right now we do have to speak on cutoff dates. I got to cut off the conversation and we'll take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Miguel Garrido. He is a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government, Cameron Luthi, senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Bill Gormley from the Gormley Group. And when we come back, we'll ask Miguel a little bit about some of the traffic in terms of task order numbers and that sort of thing. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Miguel Garrido, who is a quantitative analyst at Bloomberg Government, Cameron Luthi, a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government, and Bill Gormley from the Gormley Group. And Miguel, when we took the break, I had set you up for, and we are now in the fourth quarter of the show. Miguel, so the brush is on. Got 10 minutes left. It's like there's only 56 shopping days left, right, Bill?
That's it.
So Miguel, I'm going to shut up and let you talk about the task order profiles and what you guys are seeing.
Sure. So we mentioned that obligations spike in Q4 on multiple award contracts. The number of task orders, new task orders and delivery orders, task orders for services, delivery orders for products, also spike in Q4. Specifically, about 21% of all new task orders are issued in the month of September alone. And so what that means is that not only is there a lot of money being obligated in Q4, but there's new work being issued, new task orders. Now, those new task orders will not necessarily receive obligations in that quarter. Most of those obligations will come in the following year. But still, it's important to point out that there is new activity from the task order standpoint. Also worth noting is the number of bidders per task order tends to decline during Q4. We think that it's because there's so much work being issued and so much money being funneled through these existing vehicles that I think either agencies know to whom they want to award a certain you know, task order or delivery order, or companies already know who's likely to win, and so they don't bother to bid. As we all know, it costs time and energy and money to write proposals for task order. In fact, a lot of our customers, our clients, tell us that sometimes they don't know, you know, what's coming up as far as task orders, and that it's too soon sometimes, the period from the solicitation. So in Q4, there's so much work that is being solicited that the number of bids actually tends to decline.
Yeah, because people are making tougher business decisions about whether I'm not likely to get that one, but I have these 10
exactly.
More over
they
here.
Can chase the work that better suits them.
They and pretty so, much staying in their own swim lane.
That's
I
exactly
guess is kind of what it is.
Exactly,
which I think we all agree is smart at that point in the calendar.
Right, and exactly. it's the nature of the business, right?
Absolutely. But I can ask you a question.
Sure. Are you the host? Go ahead.
It's quantitative, man. That's just good stuff. I'm just trying to 21% of the task orders are issued in Q4.
That's right.
And then did I hear you that the majority of those are awarded in Q1 or after?
21% in September alone.
September
alone.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting.
42% of all task orders are issued in Q4. Okay. So it's even more pronounced.
Yeah, it is. For next month, I mean, here we are in August, right? So next month,
exactly
21% right. of Q4
task orders
is going to be issued
right.
in September. So we
right.
have 30 days. And so the majority of that 21%, so companies are staying busy preparing for the next quarter.
Exactly.
So I think I'm just trying to,
yeah.
So from to your point, a resource, financial and human capital, you know, there's a lot going on. And we're talking Q4 here, Roger, which you guys focused on, but now we're looking beyond that within that quarter. So there's a lot
exactly.
of cost and activity associated with it.
That's why it's very important to be on an existing vehicle, because if you're not a prime contractor, we always point out that there are still opportunities as a subcontractor. You can find, the primes on some of these large Macs, for example, LOCAP and SOUP and Schedule 70 and MOBIS. So there are opportunities for all contractors, not just the primes. But yeah, definitely it helps a ton if you're already a slot holder on some of these pre-existing vehicles.
All right, Roger, don't lawyer up on me in the audience here. I got a question. So, I'm listening to this, 21% is really intriguing for September. And that, how can that, is that obligated? So that's not yeah. obligated or is obligated?
No, it's obligated.
I thought Q1 was sounding like, that's where I'm getting, trying to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, here's the way to look at
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you.
If you think
you,
about it.
Cameron,
I'm
not
Roger.
Lawyering up on it.
Here's the way to think about it, right? Every year in recent years, you talked about it earlier. Guess what? There isn't full year appropriations available on October 1. So that's why so much of these new task orders are occurring late in the fiscal year, because the agencies need to set themselves up with task order that's on the books. The funds have been obligated so that work can continue in Q1 of the following year. In this case, in October 1 starts fiscal year 15. Why is that so important? Because under a continuing resolution, which is what Congress will pass in September,
There's no shutdown. Okay,
They're scared. They're running for re-election. It's an election year. They don't want that. You know, they did it last year because it was a non-election year and they could get away with it. At least that's the way they think about it. But the point is, under a continuing resolution, that stopgap spending to allow the government agencies to stay open, stay running, new starts aren't generally allowed.
Right. And I think a new task order or a modification of an existing task order generally isn't considered
it's
a new start.
Correct.
Right.
Because right,
it's that contract action that makes the difference.
Right. So you're not going to get a new RFP for a new vehicle in under a COR. But if you've got Macs in place, you can put out a new task order, compete that task order, and as Miguel pointed out, sometimes in Q4 at the end of the year, the competition is actually less than you would find earlier in the
sure.
year.
Sure. One quick, and we'll talk more about where we preparing for the first quarter of the next year and continuing the resolutions and stuff, Cameron. But first, Miguel, you had some stats, I think, on small business task orders real quickly. Yeah. Could you give those?
Sure. So if we just step back a little, small businesses have been doing quite well, actually, on MACS and all government contract in general. But one of the main reasons is the 2010 Small Business Jobs Act, which encouraged the use of set-asides on multiple award contracts for small businesses. We're now seeing more vehicles specifically for small businesses. One example is the Alliance Small Business Contract. Another is the 8A Stars 2 MAC. Again, all of these vehicles offer a lot of opportunities. For Q4 alone, we, based on our research, about 45% of all obligations on MACs occur in that quarter. And that's been consistent during the past 4 years. So think about that. Almost half of all the money is spent, is obligated in one quarter in the last few. And so a lot of opportunities. We think that they'll meet the, their goals, the government-wide goal, again this year. So yeah, that's expected to continue. Several small businesses are you know, the lead companies on several MACs. And so that's one trend that we've followed, certainly, and it's more pronounced than Q4.
Right. So I'm just curious now, is Q4, so you're saying 45% of MAC small business volumes?
Exactly. Of all obligations for small businesses on MACs, 45% is obligated in Q4 alone.
That is amazing.
It is.
Yeah,
amazing.
So, you know what that just.
So what do the companies do the rest of the year?
They wait for the fourth quarter.
Yeah, retailer. Exactly.
The government is their retailer. Right. I mean, that's it.
Well, yeah. Well, it's the end of the year. They need to obligate the money and they need to meet the small business goals. That's a powerful combination.
Exactly.
And these contracts are the avenue that
they're using. Establish source of supply.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, think about what those often the small business vendor brings to the table. They have experts on particular niche capabilities in technology or provide low-end services. There's a big range that they bring to the table.
Right. So, and Cameron, we only got a couple minutes left, but I wanted to give you a chance to. So you say we're going to have a continuing resolution. There's no shutdown. What's your crystal ball say? What do companies need to think about going into the next fiscal year?
So there's a risk, I think, that the companies ought to be aware of and think through, which is that the Congress comes back after the election and decides we can't reach agreement on appropriations. We'll just kick this over to the new Congress in January.
Right. If the Republicans take the Senate, right, and keep the House.
That's right. That's right. Because then I think there's an argument to be made that why cut a deal with the White House and the Democrats when you're going to have better numbers, more votes, more leverage come January and the new Congress?
Okay. And on that note, we're going to have to end the show. I want to thank my guest today, Miguel Garrido, who is a quantitative analyst from Bloomberg Government.
I'm getting his autograph.
Okay. No, cut it out now. Come on. Cameron Luthi, who is a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government. And Bill Gormley, who is the president of the Gormley Group, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.